All right, and welcome to the Dead 3 Coaching Show. I am your host, George Evian, and I'm super excited about what the guests that we have on today and actually what has been going on for the last 3 weeks in my life. If you followed my content and followed the podcast, you know I got involved with the Ben Newman coaching program, and we have a guest on from that program, and I'm super excited about that today. We have Allie Warren with us. And Allie and I were just getting acquainted. We've been 3 weeks now with Ben Newman. It's every Wednesday. It's an 8-week program. There's a lot going on with that about how to build your own personal mindset, your personal direction, your purpose, your burn, your why, everything that he's talking about. And it's also about building a brand, a business, and all that. And so the group that we're a part of, that Allie and I are part of, is really impressive. I do have imposter syndrome every Wednesday when I click on with these folks that I'm running with on Wednesdays. But just to bring Allie into the conversation, Allie, thank you so much for reaching out to me, for wanting to be on my podcast. And I'm super excited about the next hour or so with you, to learn about you, to learn about the things that have gone on in your life and the changes you've made. And before we pressed record, you started talking about mindset and attributes. I've been using the word attributes a lot recently. I read a book by Rich DeVinny, who's a Navy SEAL, and he has a book called The Attributes, which is a phenomenal book. But I'm super excited. First, just thank you for coming on the show and reaching out to me and wanting to be on this podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so I guess the question, just I'm curious on some of this, and we'll definitely get into your story. How did you end up with Ben Newman's Coaches to Coaches program, and what led you there? How did you come across? I'm guessing it's social media, unless you have a connection to him. And then what led you to say, hey, I got to be a part of this? This is something that interests me.
Yeah. So I live in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and I belong to a local mastermind here that meets every Thursday for a year long. And so I think it was in March. Yeah. Eric Rock, one of the leaders of the mastermind group, had flown Ben Newman up, and he actually made the event open to the public. So got to hear Ben speak. And shortly after that, he had mentioned his Coaches to Coaches program. And so I approached him and said, hey, can I have more details around this? And the thing that drew me to Ben above other speakers that I've heard or coaches was his story. There were so many synchronicities between his story and mine. And I have never cried from hearing someone's testimony, but I found myself sitting over there in tears because I could relate to what he had to say so much. And so I was also very impressed by his command of the room, and it felt like he was talking directly to me. So I thought, I have to work with this guy. So I approached him, got the flyer for Coaches to Coaches. I look at the start date and it was my birthday, and he goes, it's a sign. And I thought, oh my gosh. So I ended up calling his assistant, talking to her more about the program. Felt like it would be worth it to me when I learned the people that were going to be a part of that network. Just because I generate so much value from learning from people that are light years ahead of where I want to be. So that's kind of what led me to Ben, and just his overall engagement. Like, the guy was on vacation and he voice chatted me and was like, I want to do whatever we can do to make this work for you. And so I just really respected that about him. Like, he wasn't above anybody or anything. And from what I've heard about him from the guy that does our media for the mastermind, he goes, you know, a lot of these high achievers, they're weird. There's something about them that's just different. He goes, Ben is like one of the most normal people I've ever met. And I loved that everything I heard about him and everything that I experienced with him just kind of pulled me in.
Yeah. And I'll echo all those thoughts. To tell you just quickly how I got into it.
Yeah.
It was social media, but I live in St. Louis, and Ben's son, and I'm sure his daughter as well. They're both into athletics. They're both in high school, but Ben's son is a basketball player, and I am a former basketball coach, and my family, we do a lot of basketball. So I run into Ben every once in a while, just in gyms and all that. And I was always like, oh, there he is. Right. And he's just got a presence to him. I consume all his content, the intensity, the message, the authenticity, like all that sort of stuff. Like I buy into it. Like same thing that you're saying, right? Like I just felt a connection to him. And then the story with him is, and I'll make it really short. He was watching his son play basketball, actually. And I've said this on my podcast because this really hit me and it really resonated with me about continuing to look at myself and who I am and how I respond to people, and to use his quote, how I show up to other people. But he was watching a high school basketball game in my gym, in a gym that I work at and help out at. And he was watching his son play. And at halftime, I was like, hey, I'm going to go ask him. Like, my team's about to practice, and I want him to come speak to my team. Like, this would be amazing. Wow. He's in the gym. So at halftime, I went up to him, and he was with his wife, and he had seen me around one or two times, and I didn't think he'd remember me. But anyway, he shook my hand. I was like, hey, you know, my team's about to practice in the other gym. Could you come and spend 5 minutes with him? And it was awkward because he was watching. It was family time for him. It was clearly family time for him. And he ended up saying no. He was like, hey, I'm here with my boys, and halftime's only 5 or 10 minutes. And I was like, hey, cool. And I walked away. And then I was with my team in the other gym. And 2 minutes later, like 2 minutes after I started talking to my team, he walked in. And he was like, you know what? I got 10 minutes. Halftime's longer than I thought. And I've got a few minutes, and I would love to talk to your team. And then, you know, here's this guy that flies all over the world to motivate, inspire, and lead and challenge people to their next level of greatness and all this sort of stuff. And he spent, you know, less than five minutes with my team. And, you know, was the message for everybody? Yes. Did he reach everybody? No, but he did reach 3 or 4 kids. Like they came up to me and said, man, that was amazing. So anyway, that's my story. And then when I saw this, I was like, hey, I've got to be a part of this and this group of people and all that. So we're 3 weeks into that right now. Like just in terms of, before we get into your story, which I'm super excited about getting into, but like 3 weeks into this, let me acknowledge you for a second. I thought about this as we were going to have our conversation, and I try to lead with acknowledgement and all that. What I really acknowledge you for and admire you for, because I'm not doing this, is we've had these Q&As with Ben at the end. So Ben typically talks for everybody lectures for about an hour, and then he opens it up for a Q&A. And then at that Q&A, everybody, you know, can just ask questions. What I have been very quiet in that's typically how I am. It's still imposter syndrome of the people that are in this room, that sort of thing. Ben has said something about making sure you feel you belong in the room, which is a big takeaway for me. But what I'm going to acknowledge you for is when that Q&A comes on, you're not afraid. Like you're fearless with it. You're like, I feel like she's here for a reason. She's going to get the most out of it. She has no fear, and she knows what she needs to learn, or has a strategy in what she needs to learn. And you kind of go for it. And I think that's just awesome. And my takeaway for that for me is man, I wish I was more like that. And you seem very intentional. And that's a word he's using a lot. You seem very intentional about what you're trying to get out of it. So anyway, that's my acknowledgement to you, but what are you taking away after 3 weeks and what are you being intentional about trying to get from it?
I think my ultimate goal is to help people transcend their limiting beliefs. And I've been trying to expose myself to as many types of programs like this as I can, because eventually I want to take pages out of all those books and create my own, right? Mm-hmm. I think that I love what Ben's doing and I'm getting so much out of it, but I do think that over time I want to be my own person and add my own flair to things. I think the one thing I love in particular about his model is really like honing in on your burn and differentiating the burn from the why and the purpose.
Yeah, right.
I think where I've gone wrong in my life is I've mistaken my burn as being my why or my purpose. So I've run off negative fuel sources, right? I've attached myself to the approval and the opinions of others. What Ben has taught me is shifting that over to my burn and then finding my why and my purpose. And I think I'm going to go a lot further that way. And I asked a question the other day, I'm like, well, can I go to that fiery place with my burn? You know, can my burn be wanting to have that, you know, scoreboard bitch moment? And he's like, yeah, you can definitely go to that fiery place with your burn, but your why and purpose should really be rooted in more of a positive place, right? Like the impact you're trying to make on a person, on the collective, etc.
Yeah, so he definitely is leading with the burn. And I've not that I've struggled with the burn, right? Like his is very deep and is very personal for him. It has to do with his mother. And I thought about I wake up every day and think about my family. I think about my two boys and my daughter. And like, that's my burn, right? And I think about that, but I kind of wanted to, I still haven't like really like locked in on what my burn is, right? I think that my children is really kind of my purpose. I feel like that's more my purpose. Like I am here to provide experiences and memories and raise respectful young children and that grow up to be amazing adults that don't have limiting beliefs, that can go out and conquer the world and have the right mindsets, habits, and all that sort of stuff. So I feel like that's kind of my purpose. And just being honest, I don't know if I've connected yet with that true burn that he's talking about, like what, and so I'm actually kind of struggling with that. So if you have any perspective on that, but other than maybe like that, is there any other like big takeaways after 3 weeks that you've implemented that you're considering, that you're taking action on with what you have going on professionally right now?
Honestly, just networking the crap out of myself, connecting with as many people as I can. And I get so much value out of just getting the repetitions in, right? Even if I'm just having a Zoom call, there's no agenda. I think it's all going to serve me later on down the road. But I did want to add to something that you had to say, because yesterday I was on a call with somebody in a similar spot as you. They were struggling to really zero in on their burn, because they're like, I haven't gone through any sort of like major trauma. I've had a good life. I've been very, very blessed. And I think I said, it's okay. You don't have to have that, but maybe it's the fact that you have the ability and that's your responsibility. Mm-hmm. Because you have the ability, maybe that's your burn, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can handle it. Yeah. And so I think a lot of people, when they think of burn, they think, oh, I have to attach myself to something negative. But even pain can be a positive thing if it's leveraged appropriately, although the word has a negative connotation. So I can see how you would struggle to find your burn if you feel like you don't have any scar tissue to really, harness.
Yeah. And so just so everybody knows that's listening, and then we'll pivot off this, but the burn is essentially what's going to ignite your, and this is what Ben says, what ignites your purpose and your why. And it's got to be deeper, that's why I'm kind of struggling to really lock in on what that is. I think I have a very good understanding of what I would like to do and what I'd like to accomplish, maybe what my gifts are, but my purpose and my why, like Simon Sinek is somebody that I really follow and consume his content, and his is just really about inspiring people, like every day serving and inspiring, right? That's a great why. And the purpose of providing for children and giving them a great life, like that's a great purpose, but what ignites them? What wakes you up every day and say, I'm going to do this because I'm going to do my purpose and why will be ignited and I can have a great day of service and inspiration to others. So I'm still kind of working, but that is for those that are listening, kind of the burn, like you should. And I'd encourage anybody listening, just go to YouTube and look for Ben Newman and find his content. His podcast is called The Burn, actually. So you can go there. So now to get more into kind of your story and your background and how you've ended up here and what you're doing and all that, like I've read all the stuff that you have on LinkedIn, and it sounds like, I don't know what the years would be, and I know we can kind of go back, but let's start with where you're at, and then let's find out how you got there. Right now, I believe, like, you started your own consulting company. It's called Quantum Consulting, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, Quantum Launch Consulting. And then I also have an interior design business. So I'm in a nice little exploratory phase, just trying to pay the bills.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing the Quantum Launch Consulting company? How long has that been going on for you?
So I quit my job. February 15th was my last day. Day one, I just started building up this consulting company, following up with some leads that I had generated in the 2 weeks prior to my final day in corporate America. And the goal there was to leverage all my skill sets to help systematize businesses, right? And just pay the bills. So the consulting thing really isn't a long play as much as it is just a means to an end for the time being, as I build other passion projects like coaching and then my interior design business.
Mm. So that is so an outcome of working with Ben and all the other people that you're probably working with or taking advice and some guidance from is to build a coaching business, to do speaking, to go out there and much like what we talked about yesterday with Newman's program. But it's that is a bucket of your businesses that you'd like to build, correct?
Yeah, like one arm of the consulting business really is coaching, because my whole thing is I help visionary leaders execute on their vision through systems and processes. But if they are not clear on where they're going, then I have to coach them and get them clear, you know, through clarity sessions to get them there, because I can't really do my job and I can't create the vision for them. Right. Yeah. So it's kind of like leading the horse to water, and then I can get them to drink it, if you will. Yeah. So in any case, eventually I want to make that consulting business into a coaching business exclusively, hopefully with coaches underneath me who are implementing sort of the same foundation and frameworks that I carry out, but they add their own flair to it. Mm.
So let's go back then. So in your bio, you spent a number of years, many years, I guess, in medical sales, correct? And you were in that industry. Let me ask this real quick, actually. Where did you grow? Have you been in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho for most of your life, or is that just where you reside now? Because I'm a Northwestern, I'm in St. Louis, but I grew up in the Northwest. And for those listening, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho may be the most beautiful place in all of the United States. It is Lake Coeur d'Alene and the houses and being on that lake and being in the mountains and being in Idaho is one of my favorite places to be. Without question. So how long have you been in Coeur d'Alene?
So I've only lived in Coeur d'Alene for a little over 2 years, but I grew up 30 minutes west in Spokane. So
perfect.
We spent our summers on Lake Coeur d'Alene. So this isn't anything new to me, but I actually did leave for 13 years in between the ages of 17 and 30, or 18 and 31. Yeah. So I was gone for a while, did the big city thing, Bay Area, Chicago. So got that out of my system. And then I moved up here. I'll get into that part in my story, but it's been really nice to be in a place where I'm okay with not having fear of missing out or as many options. Like it really is the most amazing place to settle down.
It is. And I grew up in the state of Washington as well, but on the other side of the state, and have not been back in a long time, more than 17 years. I love it out there. So let's get into your story then. So I know it goes probably beyond just starting in medical sales, but in your bio, you talk about, you know, how uber competitive that was and the burnout. And I think what I kind of took from it was, this is what I took from it. And I know you didn't word it this way, but it sounds like you were in a terribly competitive environment. It sounds like you were absolutely killing it and one of the best people around, probably doing better than most people. But what you got out of that experience, what was, how you were fulfilled just by doing that and what your outcomes were from that just didn't fulfill you. And identify maybe with your burn, your purpose, your why, maybe it just didn't align that well. So at some point you said, hey, I've had enough of this. That's kind of what I took from your story. And if it goes back further than just your experience in medical sales, go back to like that, like the medical sales or even further than that, like the what you were doing, how competitive it was, how you survived it and what you took from it all.
Yeah. So I did almost 10 years in medical sales while I was coming up on my 10th year. And the first 8 or 9 were great. I got in with a company when I was in my early 20s. I was well advocated for. I had a lot of doors open for me. I think I got promoted 2 or 3 times. So by the time I was 30 years old, I'd worked my way up to national account manager, which is kind of like a director level role. It's not a management role per se, but it is a leadership role within the sales organization. And nothing was wrong. I mean, I had a cush job, company car, making great money. I just won President's Club, Rookie of the Year, Sales Excellence, but I just felt like I needed a change. And the one thing I didn't like was I felt like I had to do a lot of delegating and babysitting and handholding. And what I envisioned in a leadership role was more development and coaching. So I thought to myself, I think I'd rather just be independent again. So a former customer of mine approached me and said, hey, you should come work for this medical device company, which was a big time player. And I said, okay. So I went through the interview process. I actually interviewed for a different role in the neurosurgical division. And they make you do a Gallup interview. And I didn't score high enough on the Gallup. I was like right on the cusp of being congruent and incongruent. And I had talked to everybody and anybody in the industry, prepared for it. I even had the hiring manager Gallup me, and he's like, you're going to do great. My shortfall was that I talked too much. So if they ask you a close-ended question, you reply with a close-ended answer. And they just want you to be matter of fact. So if you say like, they'll be like, do you have a big ego? I'd be like, well, it depends. No, it's yes or no. And they don't really care what the answer is as long as you're convicted and you're consistent. So I wasn't convicted and consistent enough. So I get the email a couple of days after I take the Gallup, and it says, thanks, but no thanks. And I'm like, absolutely not. Is a Gallup going to determine my fate? So I called the hiring manager and I said, hey, somebody took a chance on me 8 years ago. Do you think they regret that? And he said, touche. And so I said, just let me do the case study. We can do this informally, but I have to show you the way my mind works. So he moves me along to the case study. A couple of days after I do that process, it's basically a presentation. They give you a sales scenario, and then you have to present how you would have handled that, managed that scenario. And then basically it's a role play. And he calls me and he said, you did amazing. However, I've got somebody already teed up for this internally. And I understood, because I've been hired over external people before. So I said, okay, well, thank you for the opportunity. He goes, but I called this hiring manager in another division, in the surgical video division, and they want you like yesterday. So I still have to go through the same process, the Gallup and interviews, but I passed it with flying colors. So I get hired and I'm on cloud nine. And in my opinion, I ended up getting a better role, like one that was more ripe for me. So I start this job, and I remember 2 weeks in, I go to the sales meeting and I am hooked. It was like Wolf of Wall Street. Like the energy was insane. And, but 2 months into the job, I get hit with crazy news that my two largest accounts, which make up about at least half of my territory, they're up for competitive bid. And initially it was going to be a shoe-in if this ever came up, but now I find out that I've got to get up to speed basically overnight and do a very extensive competitive trial. So I crush my trial. I introduce new ideas and just anything I can to get a stronghold on everybody. And I was really good on like the soft touches. You know, every single person in the OR knew who I was. I even went so far as to get a petition signed by all the surgeons to get our product in there and really secure our spot. But unfortunately, there was a new COO in the health system. Newer COO, he was pretty tight with our competition, and they were a private company. So they basically gave the business away and priced us out by millions of dollars. That being said, the surgeons that I had worked so hard to build this rapport with, they didn't have a leg to stand on, because how can they fight for something when budgets are so tight and we're millions of dollars more expensive? So this is also a commission only job. So as I'm going through this process and the deal is just extending out longer and longer, the decision rather is extending longer and longer. My bank account is going like that. And I start to kind of become unhinged, honestly. Like I will say, for the first time in my sales career, the commission breath was really coming out. And on top of that, it was a super toxic work environment. My partner that I worked with was never sexually, you know, harassed, no sexual harassment on his end, but verbally very abusive and intimidating, if you will. So that was really difficult. Never experienced that ever before in my career. I also had a stint with some sexual harassment that happened. Never had that happen before. And I remember just like wanting to burn it down. I was so bitter and angry and hostile. And so it got to the point where I knew I wasn't going to be there for long. I knew I had to get out, but I wanted to at least stick around long enough to see this deal through. So if I got the deal, I was just going to take my money and leave. Or if they decided no, I was just going to leave. So the outcome was going to be the same. At that point, I started to network aggressively with people in my community, join mastermind groups, because I knew I needed to be around higher frequency people to help guide me and give me the confidence to get out of this mess that I was in. What was worse is you could stop me at any time.
No, I'm curious on two things. The first thing that pops into my mind, because you've used the word a few times and I use it a fair amount, is limiting beliefs. So you go through this. What are you telling yourself when you're going through this? So you have, you know, so you have some harassment going on. You have a really intense and too intense over the top guy that's, you know, verbally abusive. You're losing two clients. Your bank account is going down. Right. And so, like, you know, I think sometimes you fall to the level of your maybe mindset. You fall to the level of your training, they say, in the military and all that sort of stuff. Like, when things go really bad for me, I tend to go on this. My limiting beliefs come out of all over the place. Like, I can't do this. I'm not, like, I'm going to lose everything, blah, blah, blah. Right. And maybe you felt that way, but at some point you told yourself to start going to masterminds, to change the connections you have, the networks you have, the frequency of the people you're with, all that. So what was your mind? Like, what were you telling yourself when all this bad stuff was happening? How long did you stay in that place? And then how did you position it then to say, shit, I'm going to go start rolling with these people. Like, 'cause I'm worth, like, how did that work in your mind?
So it was interesting, because at the same time, right when I started the job, I started dating my neighbor, and he ended up being abusive. Mm-hmm. And the job actually served a very important function in my life, because my back was against the wall in a way that it's never been. And there was life-changing money on the line in either direction, right? Either I lost a lot of money or I made a ton of money. So if not for the job, I may not have cleared him out of my life, but he ended up getting abusive. And I was also trying to manage that. So in a weird way, in the beginning, the job was like the distraction. It was actually the thing that was giving me purpose. And during my competitive trial, I mean, I was just crushing it. It was one of the best moments that I had with that company, because I'd get out of a surgery, get the survey from a surgeon, and they're like, this is amazing. So there were parts of that where I had all this confidence, and it gave me purpose, and it got me to clear that toxicity or that toxic relationship out of my life that maybe I wouldn't have cleared had I been in a more comfortable place in my career. Right.
Yeah.
Once I cleared the toxic relationship after a couple months, then I was able to see the job for what it was. And so I think I was very, very optimistic. Maybe to the degree one would argue that I was too optimistic, but I had no choice, right? I mean, I could have woken up every day and said, oh my God, what if this doesn't work out? But I mean, I told myself, you have no choice, right? It's not going to serve you to be negative about this situation. So I continued to be positive up until I remember the day where I called my manager and I said, usually I can figure out a plan B and a plan C, but I don't have one. And I barely have a plan A anymore. I was always reinventing myself. And I remember she said, well, it's not looking good, but it's okay, because it's not like you're going to get fired. And I'm like, you don't have to fire me. I'll just fire myself, because there's no opportunity here. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I'm going to need a better answer than that. Mm. And I told her that to her over the phone. And, basically, my manager knew that this territory was going down the gutter. Everybody knew it. It was, and there was nothing she could say to make me feel better. And I was very vocal about where I was at. And really, the nail in the coffin for me was when I did not hit quota. I got put into a non-quota group and told to internalize the pain. Mm. And I said, that is the last thing I should be doing. I showed up to work every single day, not getting a paycheck, and I busted my ass. And in my mind, those are the most valuable employees, is the ones that show up when they aren't motivated. Like, they're, it's straight up like discipline. Motivation ran out a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I was wrestling with the idea of, like, after a year with this company, I said, do I go to the sales meeting? Do I not? I told her, I'm like, I am not going to go through that humiliation. Not that I'm better than anybody else, but I know my purpose and my worth, and I'm not going to be made to feel like a loser.
So the limiting beliefs that you may have had going through all of this, like to quote Ben Newman, it's just top of mind because my notebook's here in front of me, is he said that, you know, that in the world of Navy SEALs, you have 5 minutes to complain and then you got to move on because people start dying. Right. And so like you didn't, like you moved on fast. Like your mindset was, hey, shit, I'm going to win and I'm valuable and I'm I can roll wherever I end up. And if this isn't working for me, I'm fine to walk away from this.
I think there was a period of time where I would, like, back to the optimism.
Yeah.
I thought that there's no way they would let me go. Almost my limiting belief was the overconfidence that I was worth something to them when I wasn't. And winners, like real winners, they know when to quit. And I didn't stick around for long. I was like, I'm going to do my year and see how it goes. But I'm not going to do another year like this. So I ended up going to the sales meeting and a week later I get my quota and it's ridiculous, you know, relative to the size of the territory at this point. And I just said, this isn't a long play for me. And there were so many moments throughout that process, I wanted to burn it down. But the biggest flex of my life was when my manager said, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. And I thought to myself, that's the flex. Burn it down. I didn't need to raise hell. And I also wasn't proud of the person I was becoming. All those old versions of myself that I tried to dissolve and destroy, they were coming back up. Because I don't want to say I couldn't handle the pressure, but I wasn't, it wasn't my pressure to handle anymore.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the gist of that experience for me.
So then you start building your network. So then you position yourself, you start going to masterminds, you start creating a different network a bigger network. And so you start just going to mastermind. What was the intention with the mastermind? Just to meet like-minded people, to start to adjust. So if you don't like the person that you're becoming, or you're starting to become, you know, maybe some old habits and old ways are starting to creep back into your being. And then you sit there and say, okay, I've got to, like, and I appreciate that because I've got to do that too. Like, I'm proud of who I've become. And I've got to make sure like I just don't fall into bad habits or bad rituals and all that. So I'm always moving forward, always trying to find the right people that can push me. But, and so you is that the whole position of just building your network, heading to a mastermind, and that's how you, I don't know if that's, how recently was the mastermind? How long ago did you start building that network?
So I started the mastermind last September. Okay. And it was a few weeks prior, probably 2 weeks prior to that. I mentioned I was with my abusive ex, and the trouble with him is that he lived 100 feet away from me. And one night I knew I needed to get him out of my life because, I had friends over and he had done something that shook them to their core. And I thought, I have to do something about this. And I was so angry and bitter, about all these things happening to me. I think it was for the first time in my life, I was feeling that toxicity and that just the, I was feeling the toxicity from all angles, you know. Prior to, it was like, well, everything else was pretty consistent, good, kind of boring. Maybe one thing was a little off kilter, but I never had everything kind of just come down on me at once. I remember I was listening to an Ed Mylett podcast, and he had Jessie Lee Ward on, and she died of some byproducts of the colon cancer treatment she was doing. She died of sepsis, but in any case, she was talking about just anger and how it fueled her and having to, you know, forgive and things like that. And I was sitting in my car, just like bawling, thinking about like, I'm so angry. How did I get here? Like, I'm not a growth-minded person anymore. I stopped dreaming. I was just going through the motions. And like, I literally asked God for a favor, and 4 days later, go down this rabbit hole, see, you know, the leaders of this mastermind that I'm doing locally, sit down with them. And I just said, I need to be in a room where people would smell the bullshit right out of me if I tried to continue down this path. And I just had to admit to myself, I needed help. I needed guidance, you know?
Yeah. One of the things that changed me and got me going this direction that I'm on now, and it's probably maybe been, you know, 6 or 7 years where I feel like I'm growth minded, like daily. And most of what I try to do was, I just heard, it was Gary V. I consume a fair amount of Gary Vaynerchuk online. And he just said, you know, you just have to be really self-aware. You have to be really, really self-aware with who you are, what you want, how you want to get there, and just be really just and call your own bullshit out. Right. And so I admire you in that, you know, you were just a self-aware of where you were going, where you were headed. You didn't like it. So you reached out, you found some people that would call you out if you weren't doing maybe what you should be doing, want to be doing, how to get to where you want to go and all that sort of stuff. So just that self-awareness, like that's a great story for me of just continuing to buy in and make choices that align with where you want to be. But being self-aware enough to say, shit, I ain't there yet. Like, I'm not there. I'm not even close. And if I keep doing this, I'm not going to end up where I could be, should be, or want to be. So that's good. So what would you suggest then? Like, how did you continue to build the network? Like, you talk about networking and building that network and being accountable to people and getting different perspectives and opinions and strategies. How do you go about doing that? Is it just, is it joining Ben Newman's thing? Is it going to masterminds? Like, how are you able to kind of build this network around you now that is supporting you, you know, providing content for you and strategies and tactics and holding you accountable to the things that you'd like to do? How are you building that?
So we talked earlier about, you know, I'm always raising my hand and asking questions. Yeah. I'm always putting myself out there and it's uncomfortable, right? So I'm exercising a muscle at the same time, but
that's good.
I am trying to squeeze all the juice out of the lemon. And so that's one big thing. And then the other thing is just trying to get more in front of the camera, do things that are scary to me, which, you know, flipping my camera around and being on Instagram.
It's hard, right? Yeah. I did it today. It is.
Yes. Because you can't read the room. You don't have any like body language or social cues to say, are people engaged or not? So that's really scary for me, but I think exercising that muscle is a big thing, putting myself out there, not being afraid to do so. And honestly, just like paying the money to be in those rooms. That nothing will get you to show up for yourself than putting down the finances for it. So I believe also, you know, when you're meant for extreme success, you have to go through extreme adversity. And I kind of experienced things. I mean, in my
that's your book. Hey, I'm going to interrupt you. That's your book.
Yeah.
That's your book title. Extreme Success, Extreme Adversity. You got to remember that. That's your book.
Yeah.
I think that's a great line. It's going to end up somewhere in my notes here because that is really good. And I cut you off. Go ahead. I just thought that was a great phrase.
No, it's okay. But yeah, so that's, I mean, I just started to be honest with myself that my way wasn't going to work. And, you know, I did have to do it my way for a long time because the dynamic that I was born into would have held me back. So I think got kind of back to like asking for help, like realizing I'm going to go further if I utilize my resources and if I go with others than I would on my own.
Mm-hmm. The quote that was at the, and I share this, I work with, maybe three nights a week. I work with athletes in the area here in St. Louis. And I had about 30 of them last night. And I read the quote from Jason Selkin. I'm going to bring it up here on my phone. This is a quote from the content that we get from Ben Newman. It says, greatness is predicated on consistently doing things others can't or won't do.
Mm-hmm.
Simply put, success is not about being brilliant. It's about being consistent. And I just bring that up. Our theme with the athletes I was working with last night was really built around being consistent with training and habits and all that. But this idea of greatness is predicated on consistently doing things others can't or won't do. And the reason I bring that up and why you triggered what you said triggered that in me is you flexing that muscle of pressing record on a phone to do an Instagram, right? Or doing a podcast or getting on YouTube or raising your hand when there's 30 people in a room for a Q&A. Right. And you say that you're working that muscle flexing, but it's that idea of consistently doing what others can't or won't do. So the idea there is won't do. Right. Yep. Everybody can press record if they were running a business and put something out on Instagram or raise their hand in a crowded room because they feel they belong. But many won't. Many won't. And the people that crush it and kill it and are growth minded and go out and attack their goals, dreams and ambitions are those that do it. that absolutely 100% do it. So that's why I started off with that acknowledgement to you, because I don't mind doing that. I just don't as much as I should. Right. And I like the idea of you saying, I'm going to squeeze the lemon. Like I'm getting everything out of this. Right. There's a great thing by Gary Vee to share this. If you've listened to the podcast in the past, listeners,
yeah,
I've said this before, cause I absolutely love it. There's this video of Gary Vee with a glass of water and it's half full. And he says, hey, some of you see this as half full or half empty. And then he poured it out, I think, on his carpet in his office, to where there was a drop in it, a drop of water in this glass, one drop. And he says, when I look at this, this glass is full as fuck. This is the fullest glass ever, right? And I was like, shit. I go, that is a great mindset to have, right? Yeah. It's like, I would look at that and say, that's, you know, at my lowest points of life, that is me, right? But like, you had this mindset of like getting everything out of the lemon and not being this can't or won't, but like going forward, having the confidence, building your group. And you come across as somebody that glass is full. Like, it doesn't matter how much is in there. That glass is always full for me. Mm-hmm. And you go out. So what leads you then to consider, with your background, that you're going to run this consulting company and you're going to go work with leaders ultimately on process and, you know, and goals and vision and making visions reality and all that, but hopefully maybe with an outcome or output also being, hey, I'm just going to coach these folks as well because they need me. So what leads you to that, to create that with everything that you had gone through?
Well, consulting can mean anything, right?
Right. Yeah.
You need help with your resume? I can consult you on that. I can do your resume. It can include busy work or, you know, big time business strategy. So I thought, really, I'm expanding myself by just offering consultative services and, you know, systems and processes. I'm really good at building out frameworks. I've done it my whole career. It's why I'm able to work really efficiently and buy my time back so that I can do more selling and less administrative work. So I just kind of took that model and said, I bet there's a lot of people I can help, because I saw so many people scaling at unfocused rates and I've seen businesses go down because of it. So I just, and then I, you know, being in all these networks, I'm like, I'm surrounded by visionaries, and visionaries are incredible people, but you know what they lack? Maybe lack the motivation to do is build out systems and processes. So is it my favorite thing to do either? No, but can I use it to pay my bills? Yes. So, or as a lever, right? So if I need to trade services, for example, to get content for my interior design business, I can say, hey, what do you need systematized in your business? Do you need marketing done? Do you need a website done? I can do that. You help me with the photos and the videography, right?
Yeah. Yep. And so you have that going, and I am curious about the interior design. And now how do you get into that world? And how did that business start? And how are you juggling both of those, I guess, at this point?
So I got a pretty good client, consulting client. So I decided, okay, I'm just going to exclusively consult for them. And I looked at my hours in a week. So let's just assume 40 hours, no more than 20 hours are going to go towards consulting. The other 20 hours are going to be spent on 20 to maybe 30 hours spent on what I'm passionate about, which is the interior design business. I've always had that eye, and I've always just had this natural ability to see things before they're even in front of me, like visualize. Mm-hmm. So, and I've moved around a ton. So I thought to myself, okay, who's in my network? Ton of real estate agents, ton of lenders, ton of contractors. What if I leveraged real estate agents, contractors, lenders, and said, hey, I can help your buyers and sellers through the continuum of their move. So what's the best time to purge and reorganize? At the point of move out. So you're not taking things with you to that next place. I'm actually going to save you money and energy, right?
Yeah.
So their buyer, I see them through the continuum of the move, strategically purge, pack, get to the next place. Typically there's a window of time in between move out and move into the new place. So if they need rooms furnished, I can help them with that too. Or I looked at the housing market. So interest rates are going up. People aren't, it's slowing down, at least in our area. I think people are more motivated or inclined to possibly remodel or redesign their house because it wouldn't make sense to move. For instance, my parents, they're like, well, we'd have to downsize if we moved. We wouldn't get as much house. So we're just going to remodel it. We're going to gut it and remodel it. So I would like to take advantage of that and say, hey, even before remodeling and gutting the place, let's see if we can redesign and reconfigure and reoptimize your space. So I'm diverse. I'm diversifying myself in that way. And then just doing ad hoc projects. Right now I have a client in Scottsdale that I'm doing some interior design work for. That's been fun. But I think ultimately it's a very active job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's long, long days. It's difficult. I'm still working with clients. You still have to get their buy-in and everything. Ultimately, I do want to get into coaching because that's where I thrive most in my life is when I'm teaching others. Mm-hmm. And I've been through so much in my life. I think I can help a lot of people bypass a lot of hurdles or, you know, just transcend their shortcomings in a number of ways.
And so in thinking about your consulting business and processes and maybe some individual coaching there, and you also have your interior design business, which seems genius to me in terms of how you've paired all those groups together and your network together to support you in that. But the big dream, the big goal is just to be running a coaching business and really to be working on. There is something like I don't know if the entire group with this Ben Newman group, if everybody is going towards that coaching route. I don't know what everybody's ambitions are there. But there is something about that world of coaching where you feel like you are inspiring people, helping people, giving counsel to people, getting, I use the phrase people's next level of greatness. Like we've all got greatness in us and we're all in this 80% bubble. Right. And many of us, most of us, if not all of us, are capable of so much more in that 10%, that high achieving 10% bucket, right? That only a few people get into. There was an Ed Milet episode recently where he talked about, and you hit on this and it triggered it for me, was Ed Milet said in one of his latest episodes that if the advice he would give to a 15-year-old or a 25-year-old, somebody, you know, just starting out, somebody still in their youth. And number one was outwork people. Like, and that seems very simple. But he said this, he said, if you are good enough, if you have the resources, the education, the network, all that, as you go and go and go and you get to that 10%, the only thing that's going to separate you is how hard you work from that 10%.
Yep.
Right. Because like, you've got to figure that out. And so but the people that we work with, it is the coaching thing. Is that the ultimate landing spot for you? Is that you want to just have this, you know, I'm not suggesting you want to be a Ben Newman type, but like, how do you see yourself in this coaching world? Is it speaking? Is it doing private stuff, one-on-one? What type of client would you have? Like, are you doing the group coaching thing? How does this play out for you over the next 6, 8, 12 months?
I think I'm open to any type of coaching, but I really do want to work with women, particularly women that are strong, powerful women. I think one of my goals going into that initial mastermind that I joined last September was I wanted to be more balanced in my masculine and feminine. I'd always been in this male dominated world. I've also had a lot of trauma and adversity in my life, and I've just had to be tough my whole life. And I do think that one of the ways in which I got my own way was that I wasn't softening when I needed to. And I don't think a woman is really dangerous until she has a better balance between her masculine and her feminine. And so that's something I'm really working on right now is softening. And that's the amazing thing about the interior design business is it allows me to be creative and exercise that feminine energy while also exercising, you know, kind of my masculine energy, business brain, logic brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's interesting because, you know, if we were to go all the way back to my childhood, I'm really at the phase of life where I'm starting to make sense of everything. And I feel like I'm truly turning over. Before I was, you know, kind of clouding old parts of myself. I don't think they had really been dissolved because they all kind of started to bubble back up. Now I feel like I'm truly turning over that old version of myself.
Hmm. There's a, your story is great. And where you go over the next, I'm very interested and excited about following what you do because it'll be really good. You know, you have me, you know, the trauma, you know, the conflict, you know, some abuse out there, all that sort of stuff, right? It's your story. And, you know, you just have me thinking about the book I just finished reading called Worthy. And I can't remember the lady's name.
It's on my nightstand. Yeah.
Is it Lima?
Lima. Jamie Kern.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's a phenomenal book. It's a phenomenal book about feeling that you are worthy enough and that you are valuable and that you are contributing and that you do have something to give and you are like all that. Like, and it's, I read that book in like 3 days and it was really, it was impactful to me because it's, you know, I even have that, like, you know, I'm not good enough for any of this. And you have these limiting beliefs and you just got to work your way through it. Like everybody's got this great story. And you just like, her story is amazing. And I feel like your story is going to be as amazing as that. And it's, you know, and it is already. And so like that you want to do the coaching and you want to kind of specialize your ideal client. This kind of came up in our group yesterday. That is your ideal client. Like women, I like, you know, strong, powerful women. Well, let me ask that. And this may not be a fair question.
Yeah.
What do you feel strong, powerful, intelligent, disciplined women struggle with? What do they struggle with? Like strong, powerful women, do they come across a certain way to men or in the business world? What do they have to deal with that people may not know about that, that impacts them?
I think that so often strength and power is associated with masculinity. And I think we do place ourselves more in those like masculine environments as well, but it could be like we don't feel like we get the respect, like we have to really earn it. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the idea of women having to work twice as hard, but I do think in certain ways, we are put in a container in a lane at times, depending on what industry that you're in. Mm-hmm. And it's really about the people that are around you. Like if you're surrounded by egos, then you're not going to be able to exercise your feminine as much. And so I think that's the struggle that we deal with. And I actually struggle in female only environments as well, because I do run more in my masculine. And I have to be very strategic and careful about when and how I insert myself, because women can also go off the rails emotionally and not exercise logic. So it's interesting, because I was a part of like a women's group. And that's one of the things that I noticed about myself, was wanting to insert myself and insert logic and override the emotion. But I think it's important for us to be, I think it's important for women to be around other women and women that support one another. Mm. So if we just take the males out of it, there's a lot of women that they get jealous and they don't want to empower each other. They think there's only room for one strong woman in the world. So my goal is to really just demonstrate how we go further together than we do alone.
You think there's also a play out there for you of changing the perspective of a strong, powerful woman in the workforce, that it's not that you shouldn't have, like, and I don't mean to say you're suggesting this, because you're not at all suggesting, I want to make this clear. I don't take it that you're at all suggesting that a strong, powerful woman needs to change her behaviors, attitudes, and beliefs to conform to anything at all. Right. But I think what I'm interested in is the play of making that workforce more aware of how valuable a strong, powerful, intelligent woman is in the workforce, as opposed to how they may be perceived. I wonder, like, does that make sense? Am I making kind of sense of that? Right. Because I would have to assume there is a perception of a strong, powerful woman. I think you just kind of spoke to that. Right. And there's a perception of it when it's just females. So I'm wondering, like, I wonder how that narrative changes. I wonder how you could have you or anybody in particular could have that impact of changing that perception of how a strong, powerful woman is viewed in corporate America.
I think sometimes women can be objectified. I'd never experienced it until one particular evening with my former employer. I felt like I was pulled into a situation because I was a woman and because, you know, these powerful people would have received me well. And I didn't like that. I wanted to be known for how smart I was and how talented I was. So I think that, I could have a really good role in that. I feel like there is, I think creating a container in which a woman feels safe to soften so that she can leverage her feminine energy. I think that's what I could really help an organization with, because I didn't ever feel safe. You know, my counterpart was always inserting himself in meetings, potentially taking lots and lots of money out of my pocket, telling me I didn't need it. I don't think that's a testament to the entire culture of the company, but in my situation, I never felt safe enough to soften and be feminine. And I can only imagine how much more dangerous we would have been as a duo had I been able to do that. But because of that, I felt like I was in competition with him. And that's why I ran more in my masculine in that particular setting. So I think that's mostly what I can help organizations with.
Yeah, I forget what the title of your book is that I've created for you, but that's a good chapter in your book, being safe to soften, right? Yep. And creating that environment and being deliberate in how you show up to allow that to happen.
Yep.
Is really important. Man, that's really, really good. And I know we're kind of running up against time. I've really enjoyed this. I'm so glad that you reached out to me. I hate to kind of say this, but because I've gone back and forth with this question. I used to ask this question a lot, and I'm sure most podcast people do. But the stuff I'm kind of consuming right now doesn't really support the question. But like, what is the 5-year plan? The passions that you have now and how you can leverage those and move towards those and progress towards those over the next 5 or so years, you know, is Coeur d'Alene the place that you can still crush it and knock it out of the park doing what you want to do? Is it somewhere else? Is it coaching? Is it speaking? Like, I know we've talked about it a little bit, but that 5-year, like, what kind of, you know, where do you see yourself in that time?
Yeah, I think Coeur d'Alene definitely is the spot. I think certain areas of my life, I'm just going to let them roll, like dating and marriage and all the things. I'll cross that bridge when I get there. But I see myself being in a spot where I'm independent financially and independent from corporate America and helping others do the same. Like, ideally, I would be, you know, managing other people beneath me that are kind of like Ben Newman's model, right? Like, he's more, you know, depth versus width. And if I can get some really solid people underneath me who can spread the gospel, I think being, communicating my message and making an impact, but doing it through others, I think that's the end goal in 5 years, is that people are speaking my message, saying my words, reading my books, listening to my podcasts. And so
good for you.
Whatever way I can reach the masses, whether that be through, you know, a public forum or through others, that's what I envision myself doing, not doing it by myself. Right.
Yeah. Good for you. I'd encourage you, this is the hardest. And I don't know where you're at with some of the social media stuff. It is hard to press record. It's always hard to press record. I do this podcast. I started it maybe six, seven years ago. And I remember pressing record for the first time, and I would sit there. And once you press record, like, I feel like I can just, I enjoy just talking and getting everything that's up here out. I just do the things I'm thinking about and telling a story about it, even if it's just me talking. Pressing record is hard. Now it is very much pressing record on the phone to Instagram. And I did it today. And I'm like, you know, I'm just going to press record. And then you're putting it out. And then your mind starts racing. Like, I know who's consuming my content. I know who is watching it. And I'm like, what are they saying? Are they all laughing at me? Like, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Right. And I heard maybe it was Ben when you asked that question. Like, I'm so thankful you asked that question. It may have been the first time we had the Q&A. So it was after session two. You asked a question about social media and along those lines. And I think this is how I took what he said. He said, the people that may laugh at you or that may roll their eyes at you, they're not important. They're not your customers. It's not who you're trying to reach. at all. Yep. You're not trying to reach those people. And so if I put this film out there and I've got my community here and they're rolling, they're not helping me move my business forward anyway, right? It's finding one or two people. It's finding one or two people that really like that content, right? I got a message from a gentleman 2 weeks ago and I've never met him. I actually don't know where he lives. I don't think it's anywhere local around me. And it was this three paragraph thing about what I do on LinkedIn, what I do on Instagram, my podcast, the content I put out and how thankful he is for it. I'm like, we just need one. That's cool. That's really cool. So anyway, that's long winded, but I mean, I just encourage you to create all the content. I think you have a great story, great message, a great way to tell a story. And really encourage you to do that. Because that'd be amazing. We're right up at an hour. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you ever want to do a part two or continue, yes. We can go back further. It's totally up to you.
No, I'm all for it. I enjoy doing this. I enjoy having conversations because you mentioned this and this is how you roll a little bit. I want to squeeze as much of the lemon as possible. And I want to learn as much as I can from everybody to form my own message, my own way. Right. So, you know, your what you've gone through, what you see in the workforce, how you feel women are looked at, that's important for everybody to hear. It's important for me to hear. It's important for me to have a consideration to that. And so that's my lesson for the day. It's that creating an environment where it's safe for women to soften. My wife, my daughter, like all that sort of stuff is just so important. And I really appreciate you bringing that up. So yes, I'm happy to do this again. All you have to do is send me a note through our little channel or on LinkedIn and just say, let's connect. How can people connect with you? And you have two businesses. You're going to be opening a coaching business. And I know you're on LinkedIn, but what are the best ways for people? Do you have a website? What can I put in the show notes so people can track you down?
I would say just on Instagram, awarren44, A-W-A-R-R-E-N 44. And then on there, you'll find my business pages. So that's probably the best way to connect. I always repost everything from my business pages onto my private page, but I also want people to see what I do in my personal time as well, not just business, because that's a big part of my story. So that's probably the best way to connect.
Perfect. Okay. I'll make sure everything's in the show notes. And Allie, you made the comment that triggered me. So you made me better just by saying you had questions about podcasts, being on podcasts and all that. And that triggered me to put something in our private chat with Newman's group to say, hey, I've got a podcast. And I figured you may reach out to me about it. So I'm thankful you did. And I'm thankful you led me to post something there. So everybody, I really appreciate it. So we're going to, as it relates to Dead 3 Coaching, we're going to be getting more guests on. They're not that they're lining up, not that they're beating down the door or anything like that, but people are reaching out to me and I'm reaching out to them because what I want to do is here are the things I've always said. In my podcast, you only change by the books you read and the people you meet. Like that's pretty much it, right? And I know what I know, and I like getting it out of my head, but ultimately having conversations like we did with Allie today, that gets us further down the road. We have better conversations. I just finished a book called Think Again by Adam Grant. It's a great book, and he's a psychologist guy that works out in the Northeast somewhere. And, you know, and he just talks about, you know, being able to kind of change your mind, your opinion, your perspective, and being able to think again, think differently again on items that you may think, you know, I know what I know. I need to know what Allie knows. And so I can rethink things and consider things from a different vantage point, different angle, and a different perspective. And Allie, you definitely did that for me today and everybody else that listened. So thank you. We'll do it again. Everybody, thank you. And please share this episode with as many people as you can. Please reach out to Allie. All her information will be in our show notes. Thank you again, Allie.
Awesome. Thank you.